You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin, columnist for the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, is Tovin Lapan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. In June, President Barack Obama announced the Deferred Action Program, which allows young immigrants who are residing in this country illegally to obtain a work permit if they meet certain requirements. The government started taking applications in August, and the first permits are now arriving. This morning, our guest is Peter Ashman. He's an immigration attorney in Las Vegas for 27 years and spokesman for the Las Vegas chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Also joining us is Blanca Gomez, a UNLV student and an applicant for deferred action. Thank you for both for being here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Peter, first, just explain the program in broad outlines, if you can. I think there's probably been a lot of confusion over what the program is and whether it's providing legal residency status and if the applicants are receiving visas or work permits. So just lay it out for us, if you could.
Sure. And if I could, I'd like to go back a couple of years to something called the DREAM Act. And the DREAM Act was some legislation before Congress that was designed to sort of give young people who came here generally at a very early age who didn't choose to come here but were actually brought here by their parents to and have gone to school here and have put down roots and become, you know, the kids that your kids are playing with, and to kind of give them a way to stay here and eventually become permanent residents and citizens. Well, the DREAM Act didn't pass. It was voted on in the lame duck session after the 2010 elections. And because the DREAM Act didn't pass, you know, the kids were left in the same situation as they were before. Going into June, the president decided that he had the ability to decide whether or not he should grant what's called deferred action to this group of people. And they've always had the ability in the government to give, to decide who it is they want to deport and who they don't want to deport. And all they've done here is basically say, for 2 years, we're going to give successful applicants to this. We're going to give them deferred action, which means we're not going to try to deport them, and we're going to let them stay here, and we're going to give them work authorization. But I think it's really important for the listeners to know that this is not a legal status. This is not, does not take the place of the DREAM Act. We still need, in my view, to pass the DREAM Act and to give a long-term solution to this problem. So for the time being, it's a two-year deferral of any kind of proceedings that could be brought against these kids.
And deferral, but it goes in perpetuity.
Well, no, it's a two-year grant, and it's going to be granted in increments of 2 years. And I think the real salient question here is what happens after the elections if the administration changes. I'm sorry, if the administration changes, and, you know, would a Romney administration extend this program? We don't really know, and when he's been asked, he has said several different things, so we're not quite sure.
That's surprising. But the deferment could end at 2 years, and that everyone could be forced to go home then if the policy changes?
Well, yeah, that's a little more complicated. In theory, yes, though. In theory, they could be deported. In fact, many of the kids that are getting this grant already have outstanding deportation orders. Maybe they got them with their family when they were unsuccessful in an application, you know, 10 years ago and have not been actually deported. I mean, keep in mind,
even with a deportation order, though, they're still eligible?
Yes.
Okay. Let me go to that, the broader question of who is eligible and who's not eligible.
Well, the general requirements are that you had to have come into the United States before your 16th birthday. You have to have attended and graduated from school or be in the process of going to school now. And by school, it's defined fairly broadly. Originally, it was just high school diploma. And now it's also things like trade schools and other kinds of vocational or even studying or passing a GED course. So arrival before your 16th birthday, then you have to be physically present in the United States for a minimum of 5 years, and then you have to be here physically present on the 15th of June of 2012, which was the date the president made the announcement.
And how do you prove you've been here 5 years?
Well, generally, our society is pretty paperwork intensive. So if the kids have gone to school, generally we're looking at school transcripts or academic histories. But there's other things like, you know, traffic tickets, medical records. I've had people take copies of their, like, their Facebook pages, do a screenshot and submit that to show on the 15th they were here and they were, you know, using Facebook, or their phone bill to show that they were texting. I mean, there's a lot of evidence out there that people can use.
There are age restrictions. You have to be under a certain age.
Right. You have to be under 31. So if you're on June 15th of this year, if you were 30 years and 364 days old, you could qualify for this program. But if you had your 31st birthday, you're out of luck.
And what about certain crimes? If you've had a DUI, can you?
Well, that's true too. I mean, there are things that will bar you from getting this grant, and criminal activity is probably probably the least understood part of all this, because they talked about serious misdemeanors in a way that we weren't really quite sure what they meant. One of the examples that they have given is a DUI would disqualify somebody. So a simple DUI, which in an immigration law context, wouldn't necessarily be that big of a deal. In this case, it would be, and it would bar you from eligibility.
Okay.
And Blanca, getting to you, you've applied for deferred action, and first, could you talk about how did you end up in the country without a legal residency status?
Basically, I came into the United States when I was 7 months old, so I've grown all my life here. I'm like every other dreamer. We came here to the country because our families were looking for something better.
And so your parents brought you here?
Yes.
From where'd they come from?
I'm from Alamo, Sonora.
Okay.
So it's one of, like, border states.
And did they come straight to Las Vegas?
Yes. My father actually came in with a work visa, and my mother came in, and, well, Andrew had inspection. So she came in, well, through the crossing the border pretty much.
And when did you sort of first realize that you something was different, that you didn't have a legal status?
I realized all my life that I had no legal status. But it was never a big thing. It was more when I saw my friends getting driver's license. That's when I noticed something was different about myself, and it was a driver's license. And they'd be asking me, they're like, "Oh, when are you gonna get yours?" And I'm like, "I can't."
And I would actually, did you ask your parents? Or
yeah.
When am I going to get my driver's license?
Pretty much. I was like, when? Uh-huh. When can we go? When can we do this? And I actually took a class, like a DMV class, in order to learn about traffic school and everything. And I passed it. I'm like, let's go. Let's go get my driver's license. And they're like, we can't.
Uh-huh. And do you have a social security number?
No.
Okay. So have you been able to work?
No. So just keep getting busy, well, being busy with school. That's all I've been doing.
And what are you studying at UNLV?
I actually graduated UNLV in the spring with a political science degree and an English minor, and I converted my English minor into an English degree. So I'm 8 classes away from a second degree.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so what was it on June 15th how did you receive the news, and what was your initial reaction?
June 15th. I was actually sleeping. I was the dreamer that was dreaming. That's what everybody keeps saying about it. I was asleep, and I woke up because a friend, one of my sorority sisters called me, and she called my home phone. She was like, "You need to wake up, your world is about to change." And I arrived to the office, and I see all my friends who I've had, like, the struggles with, and we've been there for the Dream Act, and I saw them all, and they're like, "Look what's about to happen." And I still didn't know what had happened, because I had missed the press conference when the president had announced everything. And when I heard later on that night and, like, broke it down, that's when I realized, wow, it's about to change completely.
And so what was the process like for you, I mean, in terms of getting your paperwork and, you know, proving your residency status? And when did you apply? On the first day? Did you get it all together?
I actually didn't apply the first day, and a lot of people were angry about that, because they were like, "You were one of the main components, along with other friends of mine, other dreamers that are very involved in the community. Like, you should have been one of those individuals that applied that day. You should have been there." And the funny thing is, I was helping other individuals that day, helping them with their applications and going through to see what their evidence was. And I actually didn't apply till September 4th.
Okay. And how was it? I mean, did you have any trouble, you know, proving, you know, your concurrent status, you know, staying, that you were in the country for those consecutive years and all those things, getting your records?
Thankfully, it's because I've been in school this entire time, so all the school records. I sent, like, a big old thick book of my life, and thankfully I'm also, like, a hoarder, so I kept all the documents I've had for the past years, and just needed to go get the transcripts because I had graduated high school like years ago. So I needed to go to all get the school records and just sit there and copy and pick things that I wanted to pick and choose which items I wanted to send.
And, you know, we did mention the elections coming up earlier. I mean, in talking with the other Dreamers that you know, has that affected sort of their view of the program in terms of if they're willing to apply now, if they're waiting for the election to come? Are people just sort of waiting to see how things turn out?
Surprisingly, a lot have applied, but that's always the biggest question. They always ask, what happens if Romney was going to win? What happens? Like, they have my folder, they have my life, they can come after me. That's the biggest question. But also, a lot of people are still waiting until after the election to apply. They really are. I hear stories about people just waiting.
And Peter, what are you hearing? And, you know, people coming to your office, what are some of the common stumbling blocks or just questions that people are coming to you with?
Yeah, I think that's also a common thread that we hear, is that they are concerned about the viability going forward of this program in a new administration. But I get a lot of referrals from a lot of community-based organizations. People that have some, you know, maybe a difficult case, like maybe they got some residence issues, or maybe they left in the middle and came back, or they have criminal convictions. Sometimes, I guess one of the biggest issues, I waited. I didn't file cases right away because there were still some unresolved issues as far as I was concerned, primarily what to do with people that had, like, used false Social Security numbers. Because, again, as you heard, it's impossible for somebody who came here without documents to get a Social Security number and a driver's license. So a lot of times, out of necessity, people have just either borrowed a family member's Social Security or just made one up or done something. So,
and then they're in a catch-22 because they've committed a crime.
Right, and so then how do they
get the deferred action?
Right, and on the form, it asks for a Social Security number, if you have a Social Security number. So, and then
so how have you resolved that?
Well, my interpretation of that is if you have a legally issued Social Security number, then you should list that. If you don't have a legally issued Social Security number, then you're not an obligation.
If you're here illegally, you don't have a legally issued Social Security number, would
well,
you?
Well, you know, there was a time prior to 9/11 where you could get a Social Security number if you, say, went to a bank and needed a Social Security number because you had like an interest-bearing account, and you could apply and get a Social Security number. Post 9/11, that's been replaced by something called an ITIN number, Individual Taxpayer ID number, and those are very common. People still go get those, but the forms don't ask for that, so we're not disclosing that. A lot of people have those.
And then with this program, though, when you get your work permit, you can then also get a Social Security number, right? At that point,
right.
So you've been advising people on this Social Security issue. Tell us again.
Well, if you've been using someone else's Social Security number, then, or you've been just made up, and that probably the most common one is people just make up a number. We're not listing those. We're not putting those down. And I think my justification for that is this was a program that was put in place to try to help these kids. I don't believe, and I'm counseling people like this, that this was not something that was used to sort of trap people or ensnare people or try to, you know, get information out about people so later on they could round everybody up. This was not the intent of this program. I believe the administration, when they said, look, we tried to get this passed legislatively, it didn't work. We want to do something to help these kids for mm-hmm. many reasons. They're a great resource. I think you've heard from our guest here that, you know, these are people that are bright and who we've invested in as a society, and I think it's sad to just sort of then tell them that they don't have any future here.
Mm-hmm. Are the permits coming back now?
Yeah, I personally, because like I said, we waited a little bit to file our cases. We don't have any approvals yet. I've only heard just this morning we were talking about one that has come in. I'm hearing around the country a few here and there. I don't think there's many. I doubt there's more than 2,000 or 3,000 that have been approved so far.
Mm-hmm. And I did hear yesterday that somebody at Hermandad Mexicana had come in and said that they got their...
Yeah, I saw it yesterday.
They
I
got their
to
work from
hold it.
It
yesterday.
So was that exciting for you in terms of being there and seeing the reality of it, I guess?
Yeah, because we heard like a week ago that it was going to come in. We heard the notification that it was coming in. And then it's a good friend of mine. And I saw him yesterday, and he came, and he's like, I just came from the Social Security offices, and I'm excited, and I get to go get my driver's license once the Social Security comes in. And it was just like, just to look at it and be like, oh, wow, it's really here.
And so where are you in the process now? Have you gone in for your, there's a biometrics step, right?
Yes, I completed my biometrics on October 4th, so now it's just the waiting period.
And how long are you thinking it'll take with what you've seen with the other people who applied?
I mean, I applied late. They applied August 15th. It's just, right now it's a lottery, honestly. They said 30 to 60 days, but at this moment there's thousands of other dreamers that are on the same boat as I am who have applied, so we don't know.
And when you get your work, what's the first thing you want to do? Is it get your license, apply for a job?
I think it's go to the Social Security office, wait in line there, get that. Driver's license is another thing, but also just getting life back on track. And finally, being able to be like, oh, I can drive around and everything.
Baca, tell me if the president had not announced this policy, excuse my naivety, but what would you have done? What was your plan without the ability to, without being here legally or being able to work legally?
My plan was just to continue with school till something came out. Uh-huh. Honestly, after I finished...
And you're taking on loans?
No.
Or? No, okay.
No.
Your parents have been able to help, yeah.
Yeah, thankfully, they started my bank account when I was really young, so they knew I was going to go in. They knew my education. They always pushed for my education.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back for a second degree, they're like, again? We just completed one of mm-hmm. them, and then I plan to go to law school, so that's another stepping stone. So right now, my education is my primary focus, but also, as well, pushing for the Dream Act.
Mm-hmm. But you must know people, maybe you do, maybe you don't, the people in your situation but who weren't quite so lucky and didn't have parents who had started a college fund so young, where are they or where would they be without the policy?
Sadly, I've seen them come in and out of the office, these individuals. They actually don't even know they could go to school. They were like, I stopped at high school because I didn't know I could go into school because I didn't have a social security.
They didn't think they could go to college.
They didn't think at all. No, everybody kept telling them they couldn't go. And I hear that. And then when I see younger individuals, I'm like, I tell the parents, I'm like, you should start saving for them. Uh-huh. Start saving because you never know what happens.
Uh-huh.
And for them, I feel terrible because I see them, especially the ones that didn't get to go to college. Because they thought they couldn't go. That's mm-hmm. the worst feeling. And I tell them, I'm like, I graduated. I'm like, there's scholarships out there. The university, the college, they offer scholarships, and you don't need legal status. And that's my biggest issue I have. It's just mm-hmm. seeing them get on and off jobs here and there. And another individual tells me, well, I've just been sitting down watching TV the entire time. And that breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm. And now not being enrolled... What is their eligibility for the program?
Getting back into school.
It's probably a question for you, Peter. Can they re-enroll and then apply for?
Yeah, they can. Fortunately, if they graduate from high school, they're eligible, yeah. Even though they didn't go on to college. But even if they didn't graduate from high school, I'm hearing the same thing, and it is sad, as Blanca points out. I mean, what a waste. These talented people who come here and are bright and hardworking, industrious, and then they feel like they've hit a wall. So if someone hasn't graduated from high school, they're still under 31, it's not too late. They can go back in and
they can
get
a GED.
They can go to these vocational classes.
Then they can become eligible?
Yes.
Okay.
And Peter, we talked a little bit about sort of fears and people not always applying even if they're eligible. I mean, is that something, the last time we can think of is what Reagan's amnesty program? Were there those same concerns? Were there people who just didn't apply? There's this sort of miscommunication with government, not trusting the program?
Right. I still see, and how long ago was that, 30 years? I don't know, my math skills are...
Yeah, 25.
Okay, so when the Reagan amnesty, I still see people who have been here that long, and I ask them, did you apply for the legalization program? And they're like, well, no, because we just thought, maybe we'd get... maybe it was a sting or something. So, yeah, I think that still is a big factor. I commend, your your company and others who have gotten word out and talked about the Dream, you know, this program. They call it DACA, D-A-C-A, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So DACA is what they're calling it. It's,
but everything needs an acronym with the federal government's involved, right?
Blanca, I want to ask, we've heard the term self-deportation this election cycle. For someone like yourself and people you know in the same situation, was returning to your native Mexico, I mean, I don't imagine that was ever really an option something you ever considered.
That was never an option. And when I hear that term, it's disgusting to hear it. Just for the mere fact, I was brought here when I was 7 months old. I'm going to go back to a country that I have no idea about. I'm actually taking Spanish right now in the university because my grammar is so terrible. And just hearing that term, like, offends me in a way, and offends a lot of Dreamers as well, because I prefer you saying deportation than self-deportation.
Mm-hmm. So, and the option or the idea of returning to Mexico or any other place where they might have been born is just, as in your case, they would be ill-equipped to deal with that society.
Yeah, it's out of the question for me and for many other individuals.
And right, and I imagine your education might not necessarily translate in terms of being at the level you're at and being able to function in Spanish and at academic level.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's why I'm back in learning Spanish again.
Peter, whenever we have the government and this kind of issue with folks who have language barriers and they might come from different places, there are often unscrupulous scam artists who will come to the fore, especially in our great city of Las Vegas. Tell us, have we seen any of that?
Yeah, I fortunately it's not as bad as I was sort of expecting. But yeah, initially we started hearing reports of lawyers going on the Spanish language media saying, come take advantage of the new Obama law, and charging, we heard anything from $3,000 to $5,000 to fill out an application that didn't even exist at that point. I mean, this program was announced in June 15th, and it didn't go into effect until September 15th. So during that initial period, yeah, we heard all kinds of things like that. Now, and I don't know if you've even seen, there's a billboard off of I-95, I guess around Charleston, where it says, you know, the Obama work visa, and it gives a phone number to
call. I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a visa. It's not a law. It's not a, you know, it's a policy that could, again, be changed after 2 years. So, yeah, we have seen that, but I don't think it's been as bad as it could have been.
And who would you recommend see an actual attorney about this process? I mean, how complicated is the application, and who needs to go see an attorney before filling it out?
Well, again, we're sort of in a state of flux with all this. When it initially came out, I felt that because we didn't have a lot of answers, we didn't know, for example, what the interpretation of particularly serious crime was going to be, or a serious misdemeanor, I guess. We didn't know those things. And so we were saying, look, if you have anything at all that's not just a super squeaky clean case, you know, no criminal record, very clear documentation on presence and that, you probably should have at least a consultation with an immigration lawyer. And I don't mean a divorce lawyer or someone who works at the consulate or something. I mean, you know, an experienced immigration lawyer. And there are many of them in this town. I mean, there are many very, very good conscientious attorneys in this town.
Yeah. And then, Blanca, you volunteer or work at Hermandad Mexicana, right?
Yeah, I've been volunteering at Hermandad Mexicana since the application came out.
And what's the service they provide for the DACA?
The same thing. It's the application, looking through the evidence. It's all the same questions. But when it comes down to, like, cases that are criminal cases, we send them off to AILA representatives.
And when they do have sort of the straight and forward, simple application, what's the charge at Hermandad?
It's actually 75.
And are there other places where people can go just for maybe just advice or just to look over the application? So does the UNLV legal office offer any?
UNLV actually, their La Voz is actually doing a clinic. Recently they're doing a clinic about it. And there's other, Peter Ashman as well has been very there for us when it comes down to speaking in front of crowds and answering questions. Other ALA representatives have been there for us to just to talk about it in a lot of community events sponsored by like Assemblywoman Lucy Flores and things like that in the community.
Right. And I imagine Dream Big Vegas is there to answer questions if people call.
We were the forerunners. That's why everybody was upset with us when it came down for us not applying. But also we have our own little cases that we have to go through when it comes to lawyers and stuff like that. And it's just being there for the community and surprisingly like getting the dreamers out and getting into them, getting them involved, especially with the election. That's the main goal.
How many applicants are we seeing? Is it what we thought there would be? Are there more than we thought there would be? Less.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the initial estimate was there were about 1.8 million people that they thought would be eligible for this benefit. And in Southern Nevada, as many as 30,000. And I think Irma Don Mexicana says that they filed about 800.
We're at 800, yeah.
I think, you know, I'd be very surprised if our ALA is the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and we have a Nevada chapter. And I'd be very surprised if altogether we've even hit maybe 200. So I think there's still a lot of people out there who, for whatever reason, haven't filed. Maybe it does cost $465 in filing fees to file the application. That might be a deterrent to a lot of people. But I think mainly it's just there's still a lot of questions out there still.
Is it possible that there are eligible people who just don't even know about the program, or has word spread pretty quickly through the community?
Word spreads really quickly in the community. It's like wildfire how fast word spreads when it comes down to stuff. We're seeing cases from California come in just into the office, Arizona. I actually helped a friend. He's actually from Indonesia, and that was really surprising to see.
And although you say word spreads quickly, do misconceptions also spread quickly?
Yes,
so
they
people
do.
Have the wrong idea about what
yeah.
And what are those misconceptions?
The misconceptions is always the what happens if the president doesn't win. Mm-hmm. And there was individuals in the community who were like out just saying, don't go do it. Your family's going to get deported. You're going to get deported. They kept saying that. And it was like our opportunity to go into the community and be like, no, this is not going to happen. Your file is confidential. It's going to stay with immigration.
And speaking of your family, Blanca, where does this stand for now? This is a temporary solution for yourself, mm-hmm. but you have siblings, your parents. Does this solve everything for your family? I mean, what about your siblings? Do they have a legal status?
My sister is actually a U.S. citizen, and she turns 21, so the petition comes in for my mother and father. But the thing is, my mother and father basically were like, finally something for you. And then something that always, like, a quote that always comes in mind is what Congressman Luz Gutierrez said, first the dreamers, then their parents. And that's what I see, hopefully, in the future, after the Dream Act.
And I think that's all that we have time for. But thanks for joining us, Blanca Gomez. Our guests are Blanca Gomez, a UNLV student and applicant for deferred action, and Peter Ashman, immigration attorney here in Las Vegas. You've been listening to 91.5 KUNV. This is Neon Eden, and thanks to our producer, Steven Zeller.